Okay, so Chabur number one, we are going from the general section is Beis Amud Aleph and Kedushin through Dalid Amud Aleph. Today's Amud was technically speaking Dalid Amud Beis, but with the assumption that not everybody necessarily did that already, so we'll stay within those confines. But at any rate, really just a handful of points to be made. Begin at the very beginning, the opening Amud of Kedushin. So we know that the Mishnah outlines that there are three different ways in which we can marry or initiate Kedushin, at any rate, not a full-blown marriage, but initiate Kedushin towards a woman. We speak about Kesef, we speak about Shtar, and we speak about Bia, through money, through a marital contract, not a Ksuba, but a marital contract, and through marital relations. So let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi actually addresses what needs to be done in addition to actually presenting these things. There's actually a little ditty that's recited along with the performance of each one of these, Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. So Rashi says, Bekesef uvishtar, it's the last of the opening wide lines in Rashi. Rashi says, Bekesef uvishtar, what has to happen? Mefarish bebraisa begemara, it's explained later on in the Gemara, we didn't get there yet, on Hey Amud Beis. No saint la kesef o shava kesef. He gives her either kesef or kesef equivalent. So he can give her money. He can give her, as we do today, we give a ring. He can give a piece of jewelry. Va'omela, and he says to her, Hare at mikudeshesli. You are hereby mikudeshes to me. Shtar kosev la al haniyar. The shtar he writes for her on a piece of paper. Afalpi she'eno shava pruta. Even though, by the way, the piece of paper isn't even worth a shava pruta, you don't have the requirement of a shava pruta when it comes to the shtar, only when it comes to the kesef. And what does he do? He writes on that shtar, Hareat mikudeshesli, you are hereby mikudeshes to me. Rashi doesn't say that he actually says anything. He just needs to write Hareat mikudeshesli on the shtar, but he doesn't actually have to recite anything, any verbal sort of declaration while he's handing the shtar over, as he does when he hands over the kesef or the kesef equivalent. Bia, what if he is Makadish her through relations, through marital relations? Ba'aleha, so they're intimate. Va'amar, and he says to her, Hiskadshi li bibiazu. You are hereby Mikudeshes to me through this Bia, through Biazu. Vakulu yalaf mikrai, and we learn all of these out from Psukim. What is interesting, there are a number of things that are interesting about this Rashi. One of the things that sort of is striking is the discrepancy that exists between the two verbal declarations that are required by two of the three methods of Kiddushin. The two methods that require a verbal declaration are Kesef and Bia. Rashi says that when he gives the Kesef over, whether it's actual money or in our case, if you're handing over the ring, Rashi says that you say, Hare at mikudeshesli. You are hereby mikudeshes to me. When you are mikadesh a woman through bia, Rashi says that what needs to be said is hiskadshi li bebia zu. You are mikudeshes to me through this bia. You need to specify that it's this bia that is going to be mikadesh the woman. As opposed to when you give money, there's no need, apparently, according to Rashi, to say kesef zu. Why is the word zu dropped when it comes to kesef, and yet when it comes to bia, you have to specify. If I'm giving her a tabas, I need not say that I'm being mekadesh you with this ring, I'm being mekadesh you with this money that I'm handing over, and yet when he's mekadesh her through bia, he has to say, I'm being mekadesh you with this act of bia that we're engaging in or about to engage in, or whatever the case may be. So there's this discrepancy in terms of the way that Rashi speaks about it. And what's even more striking is that there are other Rishonim, and the Rambam specifically, and I actually meant to grab one, if there is one. If you have one, it's a... Okay, so the Rambam, Perek Gimel of Hilchos Ishus, at the very beginning, actually works through our Mishnah, basically. He goes through these three possibilities. Ketzad ha'isha miskadeshes. How does a woman become a kudeshes, asks the Rambam. Im bekesef u'makadesh in pachas mipruta. If it's a kesef, then it can't be any less than a shavapruta. Mipruta kesef o shavapruta. Right? It needs to be either a pruta of kesef, or it needs to be something that is worth at least that much. Omer la hari'at mikudeshesli. And then he says to her, you are mikudeshes to me. Oh, hareyat me'uresesli. Or you're me'ureses to me. Oh, hareyat li li'isha bazeh. Or with this you become a wife to me. The point is that the Rambam adds in the word bazeh. Right? Oh, hare at li leisha bazeh. It's like you either say this, 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 or this, bazeh. Through this money that I give to you, that's what is making you my wife. So the Rambam, as opposed to Rashi, says that even when it comes to kesef, you do need to say bazeh. You do need to specify that it's this money to the exclusion of whatever else it may be giving to you. You need to specify that it's this money that I'm handing over to you that actually is mekadesh you. This is how the Shulchan Aruch paskins as well. The Shulchan Aruch says that this is what we do, and this is what we do. Right, we know the line. Hare at mikudeshes li betaba'as zu. You are hereby mikudeshes to me with this taba'as. Seems superfluous. Why do I need to say with this taba'as? Is there any other taba'as here? That's the Rambam, that's the Shulchan Aruch. That is what you're supposed to do. Not like Rashi. Rashi says there's no need to specify the kesef that's being given. It's clear, it's about whatever it is. We'll deal with what perhaps the reason is. And according to the Rambam, it must be specified that it is this. It's this. I'm zeroing in. I'm focusing my thoughts and my attention on this money that I am giving to you for the purpose of Kiddushin. So it's an interesting discrepancy that we find both within Rashi himself. Right? Rashi says that when it comes to Bia, you have to say Zu. When it comes to Kesef, you don't have to say Zu. When it comes to Bia...
That makes sense to me, though.
Yeah.
Because I've got some money in my wallet now. I give you 5 singles, and you trade them in for a 5, so it's no longer this money that's the symbol, because now it's a 5. Basically, I give my wife my ring. That's her wedding ring. If she drops it and tries to use another one, it has to belong to me. I have to give it back to her. See, it's not the item. Money can be transferred with this. It's much more difficult, or a document.
Wait, but when it comes to, let's say, I would shy away from, let's say, using a $5 bill as an example, because I only mean because the money that we have today may not be the sort of kesef that.
Well, they use silver.
Right. So let's say we're talking about whatever money or money equivalent. Rashi says that there's no need for me to say, when I'm handing that over, that it's this that I'm being mekadesh you with. According to the Rambam, I do need to say that. According to Rashi, when it comes to an act of bia, if they decide to create the kedushin through marital intimacy, even though they're not really married yet, more on that later, you really can't do that, but conceivably, according to Rashi, I need to say, it's this act, specifically. So, when does he use the word zu, and when is the word zu not required? The Rambam says you need the word zu even for money, or for a tabas, for a ring. Rashi says you don't. And yet Rashi, the notion of saying zu isn't lost on Rashi, he says that you do need that when they're going to create the kedushin by means of an act of bia. So what exactly is going on here? How do we sort of tie up all of these loose ends and make sense of all this? So Rav Shmuel Rozovsky says something very, very interesting. Who is Rav Shmuel Rozovsky? Who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich decades ago, I believe in the 70s, I believe. But there are a couple of different works that are put out in his name. One is called Shiurei Rav Shmuel, one's called Chidushei Rav Shmuel, different collections of his thoughts and writings and things like that on various mesechtos. So in Shiurei Rav Shmuel, he actually picks up on this, and he speaks about this discrepancy, this distinction between Rashi and the Rambam. Rashi says that when it comes to Kesef, you need to say Zu. And when it comes to the Rambam, Rashi says there's no need to say Zu. The Rambam says you do need to say Zu. What's the difference? So he points to a very, very broad machlokas. And the machlokas is as follows. What happens if a person is attempting to acquire something with some method of kinyan? And actually, simultaneously, he is performing a method of kinyan that in reality does work. And he's also performing a method of kinyan that in his mind works, but in halacha doesn't work. Example. So let's say a person thinks that he's going to fall on top of a lost object outside. And by falling on top of it, he's going to say that I acquire this object. You can't acquire an object by just falling on top of it. You have to do what's called a kinyan agbah. You actually have to pick it up. But if he sort of smothers it and tackles it and then stands up with it and he's holding it in his arm, so he's walking around thinking, I made a kinyan by falling on top of this item, by tackling it, he did it. But subsequently, he stood up with it and performed a kinyan unbeknownst to him. So the question is, does that work or does that not work? Meaning, do you need to have complete kavana for the specific kinyan that I'm actually performing? Or do you just need to have in mind that I want to acquire the object? And if you then perform a whole series of activities, one of which may actually be halachically effective to acquire that object, that's good enough. That works. So this guy thinks that I acquired it because I tackled it to the ground, when in reality, the actual kinyan was that afterwards he stood up and he picked it up. Does that work, or does that not work? So this is debated. This is contested. The whole question of whether or not you need to have kavana for the specific kinyan or not. Rav Shmuel essentially proves that one area that everybody agrees with is if you are performing a kinyan kesef. If you're paying for an object, and in your mind, I'm not acquiring this object because I'm giving the money for it. I'm acquiring this object because I do the hokey pokey. whatever it is. I think that I'm acquiring this object because in my mind, there is such a kinyan as the hokey pokey dance. So here I am and I'm dancing and I'm doing the hokey pokey in front of this object. In my mind, I think, oh, this is wonderful. Now, because I've danced in front of this object, I'm going to acquire it. That's nonsense. That's ignorance. But it happens to be that he also paid full cash value for this object. So he acquires it. Right? Even though he's crazy, even though he has no clue, maybe he's not crazy, he's just ignorant, he has no clue how kinyanim work. Nevertheless, because he performed the kinyan kesef, even though he's also performing something that's not a kinyan, and in his mind he thinks that that's actually how I'm acquiring the object, so he actually acquires it. That is what Rav Shmuel sort of walks away with. He's confident that that's something that everybody would agree to, that that's something that everybody would submit to. Yeah, question.
The words, Harei at mekudeshesli, says nothing about kinyan. Says nothing about the type of kinyan. All it says is you're mekadesh to me. Those words don't say kinyan kesef. Those words just say that you're sanctified to me. If he has in mind to acquire her by an impermissible type of kinyan, but he says harei at mekudeshesli. I mean,
that certainly won't. Well, let's bring it back to kedushin, because you raise an important point about kedushin perhaps being somewhat different. But this is what Rav Shmuel actually works with. It's a very interesting sort of approach. He says, so there's a distinction when it comes to kesef as opposed to other kinyanim. Everybody would agree with kesef. Why? What's the difference between kesef and other forms of kinyan? The difference is that there's nothing inherently that suggests that when I buy a sheep from you, David, and I schlep it along, that means that I acquire it. Who says? Who says? The Torah says. That's one of the kinyanim that the Torah has. It's a kinyan mashicha. If you want to acquire an animal, you take the animal by the reins, you drag it along, that's a kinyan. Who's to say that when I purchase a gemara, the way that I acquire it is by picking it up in the air? Halacha says that that's how you acquire something. What about kesef? So he seems to say that kesef is just viewed as being much more inherent. That whether I do or don't have kavana for the right kinyan, or put in other words, I may need to have kavana for an actual kinyan that I'm performing, because to imbue the act that is sort of an arbitrary act with actual meaning requires my thought. It requires my thought process. It requires my thinking about it. If I just pick this up in the air because I'm looking for something underneath it, that's not a kinyan. What makes it a kinyan, what makes this meaningful, is that I actually have intent that I'm picking this up and I'm now taking it. So that if I think that I'm acquiring an object on the ground because I tackle it and I jump on top of it, and then afterwards I pick it up in the air, so that football that I pick up in the air afterwards, I don't have any kavana that that's actually a kinyan. So why is picking up the football in the air any different from picking up a gemara because I thought that maybe I lost my napkin underneath? It's meaningless. But if you give kesef for something, it's always meaningful. There's always the implicit understanding that when you give money, when you give cash value for something that you are purchasing, that is an actual benefit, that's an actual transaction that's occurred between buyer and seller, almost irrespective of whatever other kinyan I have. We can look at that and point to that and say, ah, that's a something. That's meaningful. You wanted to purchase something. You gave fair market value for it in return. That money was taken by the buyer. and the purchaser now owns that object. There may be a distinction between the two. Take that now to Kiddushin. Maybe there's a difference between Kesef and Bia. Bia is an act that, unless I have Kavana that this particular act is meaningful, it's not meaningful. Even something like Bia. The fact is, we can appreciate this unfortunately, especially today, people are promiscuous. Right? There's nothing that says that the act of Bia per se is an act of Kiddushin that actually creates any sort of bond of matrimony between husband and wife. Who says? Who says? It's just, it's an act. What needs to be specified is not only that I intend to be Makadishu with Bia, but that I want to imbue this specific act of Bia with meaning, that this should stand for Kiddushin. What about when you give Kesef? There's no need. There's no need to specify that it's this money that ought to stand for Kiddushin, because the fact that money is given and then money is taken in of itself indicates that there's been some sort of swap. There's something that's taken place, that there's something that I've received in exchange for the money that I've given. If money's been presented and money's been taken, then implicitly it's understood that something has been given back in the other direction. He uses that to explain why it is that Rashi would say when you need zoo and when you don't necessarily need zoo. What about the Rambam? The Rambam says, no. When it comes to money, you have to say zoo, even when it comes to money.
Right.
He says, the Rambam, though, understands that there's a distinction between Kiddushin and other kinyanim. If I walk into a store and I want a sack of potatoes and I put down $3 on the counter, it's implicitly understood, whatever you may know or not know about kinyanim, it's understood that you now received $3. That was an exchange for something. Everybody gets that. It's inherent. It's the way that society always operates. If I put down $3 on the table, it means that I'm getting something in return. It's clear that I've made a kinyan on a sack of potatoes. What about when it comes to marriage? It's not really an exchange, right? As much as, and that's sort of a broader issue that needs to be highlighted and is highlighted on the coming pages and the coming Dapim, Amudim, and whatever, that as much as we speak about Kiddushin being done with Kesef as being a Kenyan, and it's Niknes, and it's Kicha Kicha Miste Ephron, and it's learned from the purchase of a field, as much as we speak about all that, it's not a typical Kenyan. Because typically when you buy a potato, you can bake a potato, you can mash a potato, you can smother the potato in sour cream and chives. Try doing that to a woman. It's not a good idea. won't be very popular.
Both the Kesef go to the father of the right?
If she's a kid. Okay.
So if you're saying that this Kesef is general Kesef, like any amount that you want to give for this, for my daughter, for the right, is fine. Or is Rambam saying this Kesef, this amount of coin, this amount of silver, is
that's why you need to say it's this amount, it's this,
right,
it's because
a particular amount.
Because it's not an exchange. If I drop $3 on the table for a sack of potatoes, fine, we get it.
$3 on a sack for my wife, she hit me, you know what I'm saying?
But
it's got to be an amount.
But continue with that. Try dropping, and he doesn't actually, or Shmuel actually doesn't explain this aspect of it, but I think this is where he's going, because he says that there's a distinction between a kinyan, which he calls a tamura. A tamura is a swap. A tamura is an exchange. We use the term tamura in regards to chalipin, where it's an actual exchange, it's an actual swap. Kiddushin isn't a tamura. A sale is a tamura. A sale is a swap. You want money, I want potatoes. I give you $3, you give me 5 pounds of potatoes. When you give money to a woman or her father, you're not buying the woman from her father. You're not buying the woman for herself. You're right. Put down $3 on the table, and a woman's going to slap you. Put down $100,000 on the table. She's still going to slap you. I'm worth $100,000. That's what I'm worth to you? Are you kidding me? Good. $1 million. Are you joking? I'm going to dedicate my life to you. I'm going to live with you. This is marriage. I'm going to be mikudeshes to you. You're not buying me. I don't have a value. There's no dollar sign that's been emblazoned on my forehead that says what I'm worth. You can't afford me, Buster. It's not a tamura. It's not a swap. You're not actually paying for her services. She's neither a sack of potatoes nor a cleaning woman, right? It is utilizing Kesef as a vehicle to enter into a relationship with one another, but it's not an actual swap. So Shmuel learns that perhaps that's why the Rambam says that, no, you need it. You need to say, it's kesef zu, because it's not implicitly understood that I give you money, I get something back in return. You get back in return. You get me as a wife in return? Like, who says? You need to specify that, no, I'm having kavana. I'm zeroing in. I'm saying that it's this money that is going to be yours. Why? Because otherwise that money could totally be construed as a matana, as a present.
You're saying, you're still saying, you're just not saying the bazoo. With bazoo.
Maybe different money.
This is,
you know, it's almost easier to understand today, because today in some circles, like, we've gone so wild with the number of presents and gifts and other layers of things that need to be given from chassan to kala, from kala to chassan, prior to the wedding. That, oh, you're getting married. So here's this. So the bracelet goes over here. And then you get a pair. Then you get the pearls are going to happen. And then you're getting, you also get the ring. And then you also get the wedding band. And then the chazah, so the chazah, he needs to get the watch. And he needs to get a shas. And he needs to get a... And there are all these things going back and forth. So maybe it's not this money. Meaning, even if all signs point to, yeah, it is, there needs to be that extra word of zu so that we zero in on my kavana being that it's specifically this money, because it's not implicit. It's not like an implicitly understood swap as it is if you're actually buying something. You're not buying anything. So then it needs to be absolutely spelled out to the nth degree that it is this money and no other money, and this money doesn't stand for anything else. It's not a matana. It's not just a gift. This is for your kiddushin.
This money at this time.
It's this money now is what I'm using to be Makadosh. And again, the notion of saying zu isn't lost on Rashi. He uses it for Bia, he doesn't use it for Kiddush, for Kesef. It's interesting that the Rambam says, no, you need it even for Kesef. I believe, Shmuel doesn't talk about this next phase, but I believe that this, you could take this Chiddush and you can run with it. You can take this approach and you really run with it. Something else that sort of bothered me about Rashi, and it's not really a Rashi issue per se, but when Rashi speaks about shtar, he says, what's the shtar? The shtar is you write on a piece of paper. By the way, afal pi, she'eno shava pruta. Even though it's not even worth anything. It's worth even less than a shava pruta. Why does Rashi tell me that it's even less than a shava pruta? So to be fair, Rashi's just quoting the... Later on, we bring a brisa on Tes Amar Aleph that says just that. Write a shtar on a niyar, on a pot shard, on a leaf, on a piece of trash that you find. The brisa says, even if it's not worth a sheva prut, that still works. Why does Rashi tell me that? So Rashi tells me that, you know, very simplistically, you could say that the reason why Rashi tells me that is because, you know, if it's worth more than a sheva pruta, the Torah doesn't need to create this brand new chiddush for me and tell me that there's such a notion as shtar, as a contract. Because once it's worth a sheva pruta, it can also work as kesef. It also works as kesef. If it's a beautifully ornate, you know, drawing and, you know, artistic sort of rendering with a border and with, you know, with all the floral decor brimming over the top, and it says, Hareya Mikudeshes Liyana, it's a beautiful piece of art. That could stand as kesef. That's money. That's something that's really of value. So I already know that works as kesef. What do I need shtar for? So Rashi says, you should know that shtar even works when it comes to less than a shava pruta. Perhaps that's all it is, and that really ought to be where it's left. The Rif says something very interesting. The Rif on Gimel Amud Aleph, the Daf Pei Rif, actually quotes a Yerushalmi, and he says, according to Yerushalmi, Hadad Tema Bishtar She'in Bo Sheva Pruta, when we speak about a shtar, it's that it doesn't have a Sheva Pruta. Aval Im Yesh Bo Sheva Pruta Kesefu. If it's worth more than a Sheva Pruta, then it's Kesef. Then it's money. The Ran asks why he bothers to quote from the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is a totally different... Like, when do you ever pull a Yerushalmi off the shelf? The Ran says, we have this, so it's right. Tesam et Aleph, it's exactly what Rashi is quoting from. It's a Gemara that we have. Why are you jumping all the way to Yerushalmi? Our Bryce already says, it's quoted here, Bishtar Keitzad, what do we mean when we say Shtar? Kasav lo al haniyar o al acheres, you write on a piece of paper, a pachard, afal bishin bo sheva pruta, even though it doesn't have a sheva pruta. So why does he quote from the Yerushalmi that if it's worth more than a Shavapruta, it's already Kesef, we're talking about less than a Shavapruta. According to this, everything that we've outlined with Rashi and the Rambam, it actually makes a lot of sense. How might I understand this Braisa? This Braisa says that it doesn't need to be a Shavapruta. What if it is a Shavapruta? So according to the Rambam, just because you're giving Kesef, that's not good enough. You need to specify that you're giving Kesef, that it's this Kesef at this time, and why. Right? I'm giving this Kesef so that you should accept the Kesef and you should be Mekudeshes. If the Kesef's just left on the table and she happens to accept it, that doesn't create Kedushin. So if I'm giving it to her as a shtar, and she accepts it as a shtar, I don't care if it's worth $1,000.
What is that?
Is
a shtar?
A shtar is a contract. A contract. So if I'm giving her this document, this contract, and it's beautiful, it's ornate, it's a $1,000 contract, it's a beautiful piece of artwork, and she accepts it as a shtar, she accepts it as a contract, and she doesn't accept it, nobody's thinking about this as money. According to the Rambam, that wouldn't work. It doesn't work automatically. It doesn't kick in automatically. Keset doesn't kick in automatically. The Rambam says you have to say zoo, because just because I present money doesn't kick in automatically. Like Rashi says, the Rambam says, no, you got to specify. So what happens if I give it as a shtar? I give it as a contract. And she takes and she thinks, wow, what a beautiful shtar. It doesn't work as a contract. Just because it's worth more than a Shavapruta doesn't mean it's automatically going to kick in as though this is a Kinyan Kesef. Kinyan Kesef needs to be specified. Got to say zoo, got to say what it is, got to say that this is what I'm giving it for. So the riff actually makes a whole lot of good sense. I would suggest that the riff, fitting in with this whole scheme, that the riff is aligned with Rashi. The riff holds, and he's quoting this from the Yerushalmi, something that you can't really get from our Gemara. He says what's clear from the Yerushalmi is that it's automatic. That the only time, it's not just that we have it, that it also works if it's pachos mishavapruta. It also works if it's worth half a cent. No, his point is that it only works if it's worth a half a cent. Because as soon as it's worth anything more than a nickel, it's not a shtar anymore, it's not a contract, now it's kesef. Because kesef happens automatically. You present kesef, you don't have to say zoo, you don't have to have kavana. If it's given and taken, it's over. The kinyan has already happened. Like Rashi. And I would suggest that is exactly what the Rith holds, which is why he has to borrow from Yerushalmi. And that was a point that the Ran didn't necessarily get in the Rith. The Ran is going in a different... The Ran is like going in the Derech of the Rambam. It doesn't really see this in the Rith. The Ran, I don't want to get into it now. The Ran may actually come full circle. And the final answer that the Ran gives, he may sort of be getting there. That, wait a second, maybe the Chiddush is that actually it works automatically. He may be saying that, he may not be saying that. It's not exactly clear with a particular lashon that he uses. One other point in the Rambam. What ought the Rambam to say about a shtar? What we would want the Rambam to say is that if the shtar, somehow or another, is worth more than a Shavapruta, let's say the shtar is worth $1,000, so that it's valuable as kesef, but let's say it's not valuable as a shtar per se. Let's say it just doesn't work as a shtar. We would want to say that it should still work as kesef, that it wouldn't work as kesef anyway. It doesn't work automatically. The Rambam, who says that for kesef, you have to say zoo, it's this one, it's this, it's here, it's now, it's this kesef, you have to specify, just giving it isn't good enough. It doesn't happen automatically. We would want to say that even if you're giving a shtar a contract that happens to be worth $1,000, if it doesn't work as a contract and it's not specified that it's being given as kesef, the whole thing will blow up in your face. The Rambam, this is a diuk from the Shar HaMelech. The Rambam says in Perek Gimel, this is just shortly after what we just read in the Rambam, Perek Gimel of Hilchos Ishus Halacha Dalet, he says, "V'tzarech sheyichtov oso l'shem ha'isha hamiskadeshes keget." Just like a get, it has to be written for the sake of this woman. That's the halacha for a get. It has to be written l'shma. It has to be written with this particular woman in mind. It can't be a template that you buy in a Judaica store and you just fill in the blanks afterwards. The entire item, start to finish, must be written with this woman in mind. Vano kosvo elamidaita. And it can only be written with her consent. She actually has to give her consent ahead of time that this document even be written or even be commissioned in the first place by the sofer. Kasvo shalom lishma. Let's say he writes it not lishma. Oh, lishma shalom idaita. It's written lishma. It's written for this woman, but she, trying to strong arm her. Listen, sweetheart, I already have the document here, it's already ready to go, and then maybe she'll be willing. She's asked to give her consent ahead of time. So let's say he didn't do those things. Afal pi shenasnala, even though he gives it to her, ledaita, afterwards she consents, she says, yeah, I want to take it now, but it wasn't written with her in mind, it wasn't written with her consent, and even though it was given b'fnei edim, two witnesses saw it, eina mekudeshes. She's not married. Shaar HaMelech says that it's interesting that the Rambam doesn't split hairs and say, well, it depends, is it worth the Shava Prudah, is it not worth the Shava Prudah? Blanket statement. If you give it to her as a shtar, as a contract, and it doesn't fulfill the requirements of a contract, because it's not written lishma, it's not written with her consent, it doesn't work. Why doesn't it work? It should work as kesef. It's worth $1,000, $1,500. This is an expensive piece of property. Because the Rambam already said that if you're giving something as kesef, you have to say kesef zeh. This kesef. It's got to be this kesef. According to Rashi, this absolutely ought to work. It doesn't matter what your kavana was. It doesn't matter whether you meant to give it as money or didn't mean to give it as money. If you said zeh, you didn't say zeh. You say that it's this, here, now. As long as it's given and accepted, it works. Period. End of story. So you find that the machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam, as sort of structured by Rishmuel, actually seems to continue this whole way through. Final point on this in the Rambam is that actually the Rambam ends up being really, really beautiful. Whereas Rashi quotes the Brisa later on verbatim, saying that, oh, and even though it's not a Shava Pruta, because to Rashi that's significant, that's actually the only time that the Shtar really makes a difference, only if it's worth less than a Shava Pruta. Because if it's worth more than a Shava Pruta, you don't need Shtar anymore, it's already Kesef. The Rambam, when he speaks about how you write a shtar, says nothing about how much it's worth. He doesn't say anything about the value being more than a shava pruta, less than a shava pruta. V'mkidesh b'shtar, if he is mekadesh with a contract, kosev al haniyar o al acheres, then he writes it for on a piece of paper, or on a pachart, o al ha'ala, or he writes it on a leaf, or al kol davar sheyirtzeh, whatever he wants. But he doesn't start saying that, oh, and specifically when it's less than a shava pruta, or even if it's less than a shava pruta. According to Rambam, the chiddush is equivalent. Whether it's less or more than a shava pruta, you need to introduce this whole concept. Because if my kavanah is to give this as a shtar, whether it's more than a shava pruta, less than a shava pruta, it won't automatically work as kesef. It'll only work if it's actually being given as a shtar, and the kavanah is for a shtar, and it works, and it's effective, actually, as a shtar. It sort of wraps up. I'm sure there's more, and we'll continue to uncover, but at least wraps up that initial inyan for now. How does kesef work? Does it work automatically? Does it need to be specified? One other item, David, we spoke about this, but one other item that I think is worth mentioning, whether it's chazara or brand new, on Beis Amid Beis, it's a really sweet, beautiful kind of thought. The Gemara starts to deal with the word derech. Right? We're bothered by the word derech. Derech sometimes appears to be masculine, and it sometimes appears to be feminine. And one particular pasuk that we quote is "Vahodata lahem es haderech yochuva," that to inform them of the derech that they should go in. And derech, we see by using the word va, derech here is feminine. And yet later, when we found another pasuk in which the word derech is used, "Vaderech echad yetsu elecho v'shiva derachim yanusa lefanecha," that they'll go before you in one path and then they'll be scattered, they'll flee in seven paths, speaking about the might of Klal Yisrael coming into Eretz Yisrael. So speaking about the derech of war, we find that derech here is masculine. The Gemara says, I don't understand, why is derech in one place, in one pasuk used it, why is it feminine, why in another place is it masculine? So the Gemara says, really, there's no issue here. There's no issue, because it depends on what we're talking about. In the first pasuk, we're talking about derech yelchuba, we're talking about the Torah. The Torah is feminine. When it comes to the derech, b'derech echad yatzu elecha, that pasuk, we're talking about milchama. Milchama is masculine. When the Gemara explains these, it says, why is milchama masculine? Because men fight wars. Women typically don't fight wars. Okay, devorah, yeah, but typically speaking, it's men who fight wars and not women who fight wars. Why is Torah feminine? So we point to a pasuk. Torah's Hashem Tamima, Meshivas Nafesh. The Torah of Hashem is perfect, it's complete. It restores a person's nefesh. It restores a person's soul. What exactly is the Gemara proving? How does the Gemara prove that derech, when applied to Torah, ought to be feminine, ought to be nekeva, because Torah itself is a feminine sort of item. How is it that this pasuk proves that? Now, when it if it's that, listen, we say that Torah Hashem Tamima. Tamima is a nekeva, it's a feminine adjective. So maybe that proves that Torah is feminine. That's incongruous. When it comes to Milchama, we say that the reason why Milchama is masculine is not because of the word itself and not because of the adjectives that are used and not because of the actual, the other terms that are used in the pasuk. The reason why Milchama is masculine is because Milchama is a masculine kind of thing. Men fight wars. So then it can't be that we're pointing to this pasuk and we're saying Torah Hashem Tamima, the reason why Torah is feminine is because the word Torah, the way it's being used, the other terms, the other words in the pasuk all happen to be feminine terms. It's got to be like in the kishkas of what exactly Torah is. Furthermore, if we're only trying to prove linguistically that Torah happens to be a feminine word in Lashon HaKodesh, we don't need to jump all the way to Sefer Tehillim. We could find another pasuk someplace earlier that deals with Torah as being a feminine word. The Maharsha says exactly that. He asks those questions, and he says, you know what's going on? We're not pointing to this pasuk to show you, look, we use the term tamima, which is feminine, to modify Torah. No. He says, the fact that there's a pasuk that describes Torah as being Torah's Hashem tamima meshivas nafesh, Torah is something that restores a person's soul. Torah is something that rejuvenates, that reinvigorates. That is a feminine quality. He says, consider a baby who is nursing from his mother. The baby's crying, the baby's all upset, the baby is anxious and whining and everything else. It's the middle of the night, and suddenly the baby nurses and the baby's calm, and everything's fine. And the baby's been rejuvenated, and the baby's been calm, and everything's okay, everything's at peace. Maharsha says that that's the idea. When we say Torah Hashem Tamima Meshivas Nafesh, that the Torah rejuvenates, that the Torah restores, it's because that is really a feminine quality. And we're speaking about the Torah in those terms. The Maharsha says that the Torah is just like that. The Torah is like a nursing mother. And if you're agitated and upset, and you've sort of lost touch with your own nefesh and your own neshama, just like a baby can go to its mother and nurse and be restored, so too we can go to the Torah and also be restored. A very feminine sort of notion, a very feminine sort of quality. Hence, derech, when used to refer to Torah, also becomes feminine. Let's pause here and wish everybody continued hatzlacha with next week's Amudim.